The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rox from Ensemble, and I'm thrilled to be bringing to you the podcast Engine Room. It's devoted entirely to the practices or the business of financial advice. Over the course of the next many months, we're going to be interviewing Australia's best independent boutique advice firms, their practice managers, their GMs, on what environment is conducive to being a best practice, how they keep talent, how they attract talent, and what the future of financial advice is. It's the Engine Room Podcast. Welcome aboard. I'm Andrew Rox, and welcome to another edition of The Engine Room. I'm sitting aloft St Kilda's Road, gazing out into the distance, the beautiful cloudless day here in Melbourne, as they always are, and I'm delighted to be with the CEO and founder of the Partners Wealth Group, Matthew Cassidy. Welcome to the mic, Matt.
Great to see you again, Roxy, and looking forward to being on the show today.
One of the things I like doing is I think I might have met Matt 2010, 12, something like that.
I believe so, yeah.
And actually, I just confess that when I was looking to join a licensee and we had a sort of a diversified business, they threw you in as Burley to attract me to them because and I've our paths, I suppose, changed in that I exited that business and you've just told me you're 4X'd yours. So it's, well done in advance.
Thank you. Thank you, mate. It's certainly been I think we're 24 years into the business this year, and it's certainly been a journey full of challenge, full of opportunity, and but I think it's certainly been now a very exciting time to be in advice.
Absolutely, and you know, we had a bit of a chat off mic, and you know, when you look at the sticker, and the sticker's good this year, right? You just got Barron's number one for the most investment for an individual. You've got many of your team members in there, but you and I sort of we're talking that you really wanted to give the listeners, who predominantly are in the industry, yep, the fact that it doesn't just happen.
No, correct.
It's not an overnight success, and potentially on that theme, it'd be great to hear, you know, how you got into advice.
Yes.
And when the spark happened that started working.
Yeah, 100%. So my background was in chartered accounting. I was EY Perth, got the opportunity to head to London. We were getting paid about 5-6 times more over there than we were making back in Perth.
Was that around the turn of the century?
Like that was 1997.
Oh, $3 to the pound.
$3 to the pound. It was expensive arriving there, I can tell you.
True.
My first week's accommodation cost me $2,000 staying in Earl's Court, as most Aussies often do.
Yep.
And as opposed to heading down to Margaret River or Busselton, we're heading to Paris and New York for the week. And it was pretty amazing time, and global markets were certainly working in our favour in the late 90s. When I arrived back, very much saw an opportunity to use my love of investment markets through 3 and a bit years of investment banking with my chartered accounting background, and thought this financial planning industry is ripe for some change. I think it's ripe for some professionalism. And we had a vision to very much engage with probably what was considered to be a disjointed relationship between accountants and financial planners. And so that was the origins of Partners Wealth Group.
And I think in the late 90s, there were a few attempts for accountants to aggregate up and to roll in with financial advice. And almost inevitably, they failed. Would that be fair? You saw those sort of situations?
We saw plenty. Mm. What we saw is that predominantly around that period of time with compulsory super in 1991, advisors thought superannuation was a product to sell. There wasn't a lot of strategy. And accounting firms were really, not really satisfied with the quality of advice advisors were actually providing.
Oh, they look down their nose. There's no doubt. Probably with due course.
100%.
Yeah.
Some of the stories we've got will probably take us a lot longer than this podcast.
Yeah, and we probably my litigation budget's probably not big enough.
That's it. So what we saw is that through the nature of advice, we saw that people at that point in time, and I think still today, when they have a major financial decision in their life, go to their accounting firm.
True.
And when we started off our business with simply in a pretty ordinary office, it was about 100 square meters on Glenfrey Road, Malvern. It was really, really dour. But we started, we put all our money that we had at the time, and I made overseas, into it. And we thought, we need to be in front of people. So we needed to be speaking to accountants, but we needed to think strategically about how we actually add value through that particular process.
So the Genesis piece was just as much about getting partners, hence the name.
Correct.
Than getting direct clients.
Correct. 100%.
Okay, interesting.
So the nature of accounting through its legislative nature is backwards looking. You head your accountant, they talk about your tax, they talk about your financials, and then people with a decent level of wealth or financial resources then say, well, what do I need to do with this? And from a licensing perspective, accountants actually can't provide that advice. And we thought, well, what if we could break that connexus between wealth and advice, have a broader level of engagement with the client, but put the accountant right back at the center of the advice? And what we found early on, I think particularly with some, you know, really top-end advice around self-managed super, which was really accelerating, it actually had some traction in the market.
Well, I can remember back, it might have been the late 90s, you could actually negative gear in yourself in a super fund for a period of time.
Well, you still can. I think that originated from the T1 and T2 Telstra installment warrants. And
exactly
then
right.
2007, it was about November, just as the GFC was kicking off, the government allowed the limited recourse borrowing arrangements. And so our business actually during the GFC grew by about 30% because I think we were sort of experts in that particular area.
Right.
And you can still do it today. Obviously, it's restrictive and applicable for those that need it.
So when you first kicked off, were you also, so you were out there getting the accountants and change managing them, which would have been tough, right? At the end of the day, I bet you had quite a few doors slam in your face.
We had plenty. We say today that any accountants that had cardigans and pets in their office, we generally avoided, but there were some interesting stories. And I think the success criteria is that when we went into the office and we shared stories of things, of various advice we could provide to accountants, that they were actually missing because of their limited engagement, actually really started to change the dial. And 24 years in, when we see an accounting firm, I think these days it's a not negotiable to think about broader advice.
Yep.
Because if the accountant or you're not having that conversation and the client has a need, they will find it through somebody else. And the risk is they're going to be dealing with someone outside you.
100%.
Yep.
100%. So so you've kicked off this business. Did you do much direct client work yourself?
I always have.
Yep.
I think that there was a point in time where there was probably some pretty strong views that you should get off the tools. I've really remained on the tools, and I still look after many high net worth families at the moment. Probably more focused on the clients that are transacting off the back of, you know, large transactions, intergenerational yep. wealth, etc. At the more sophisticated end, and I don't think you can be effective in this industry by telling your team what to do if you're not doing it yourself, which is just my personal view.
Yeah, leading from the front, I suppose, is part of the philosophy. So, and how did you run your operations back then? Because it wouldn't have been many in the business.
No, there was an interesting moment. It was the 1st of February 2005. We're a couple of years into the business. I think there was 12 of us, and we were on Glenfree Road, Malvern, and the accounting firm above us said, "You need to get out of the building. The building's on fire." And I thought, "Okay, we'll have a quick coffee break."
Was it a metaphor or actually on fire?
It actually was on fire, shit. Unfortunately. So we saw 13 fire trucks turn up over the following 3 or 4 hours. We saw the building pretty much destroyed. We walked away with a couple of computers, and those were the days for the younger viewers that were showing our age. But there were checks on desks; they got destroyed, and we had to seriously rebuild. So that
and you would have had a server. Is that where you had to run in and get?
Fortunately, Jesus. We put some bubble wrap over the server.
Oh, wow.
And we managed to recover that after about 6 weeks. And we thought we need to think differently about what the business could be. And that was rebuild stage, Roxy.
Yeah, okay. And from that perspective, where did you end up next?
So we decided to take on some more office space.
Yep.
We thought that what we were doing was certainly gaining traction in the marketplace. But we also needed to attract some advisors. And
how many partners had you? Sorry,
there were three of us, the original.
No, but how many accounting partners had you managed to?
10, really through the first 12 months.
Yep.
And that sort of expanded to 15 and then 20. Okay, continue to accumulate. We had a partnership program where we'd engage with them. We'd talk with them about the issues they actually had.
Yep.
What they're being faced with. And we certainly became their SMSF experts as well, because it's quite a, you know, highly technical area and one that some of the smaller, you know, one or two partner firms didn't have a lot of capability in. So we would really be their partner along that as well.
And your logo throughout the since inception is a series of birds. Maybe if you can just give us, because I'm looking right past you at one now.
Yeah.
What does that? What's the significance?
We've got a concept that when geese fly in formation, they fly 71% further, and we think that life is full of up downs and sideways. And if you can fly with trusted professionals, whether it be 71% further or not, we think you'll fly that little bit further. In our logo, we have three geese as well, which signifies the client, accountant, and the advisor very much working together on a sophisticated outcome. We have tested that with a few people, and a few people said that looks like a duck's humping, but it's actually three geese. And it's a story about who we are and who we stand for, Roxy.
And if I'm talking with your legal team, your property advisory, and your mortgages team, they'll just say it was those three.
That's it.
So it is what it is.
Ducks. Yep.
So you've kicked off, but we were talking before that you also harboured other ambitions when you came back. You thought it'd be a reasonable idea to potentially be a golfer. Who knows which would have made more money?
Yeah. I think I made the right decision. I've played golf since I was the age of 12, and growing up in Perth with amazing weather, it was pretty much picking up every ball since I can remember. Played a lot of footy, cricket, tennis, and I started playing golf the age of 12, and then from about the age of 20 to sort of today, I've played off a pretty low handicap. I was playing off about +3 when I came back from London. Played in the Australian Amateur. Played in another event called the Riversdale Cup in Melbourne. I think I came 30th or 28th and thought I'd better get a job because I'm going to go hungry.
So there's only so many of those pounds that you brought back.
That's it. They don't last long.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're paying all your own expenses.
That's right. And you've, apart from work, which you're pretty intense, but the business now is we're going to get to in a second, the size and scale of it. What do you do to turn off? What's sort of things you do outside of the business?
To me, there is no work and the work and play. There is no work life balance. It's just life. I think we're in the industry of effectively engaging with people that need help and need advice and need our expertise with it. So, I always say to my clients, I'm all in. Just an interesting story about that. We live Bayside in Victoria, and it was a Saturday, and one of my clients, who's certainly one of my favourites, just a very funny Englishman, called me one day and said, that property we've been talking about, I've found one. I need to have a chat to you about it. And I said, where are you? His name was John, and John said, well, I'm outside your house. At 12:30 on a Saturday, I said, John, well, you better come in and have a cup of tea or a beer and let's talk about it. And I think that's always been our approach, which is if you're all in with people, you're always available. And so there's such a meshing between life and work. But I think if you care about people and you have the view that you want to try to make their lives better as a result of your engagement, that's got to be your philosophy. I mean, it is also important to switch off over break every 3 to 4 months.
Okay.
Try to get actually outside Victoria where things are quite intense and switch off and certainly keen runner, complete a few marathons, hit the gym 3-4 times a week, and certainly on the golf course as well, where I straight out like a little ball and I'm not looking at the computer is quite a little bit.
And it's hard to perfect, right? I've got to ask. So after that day where your client stalked you, is that the day that your wife went out and got a PO box?
No, I was. In fact, we have dinner with them and they're great people. So, always there to help great people.
So the kind of I'm reading you're partnering with us. So partners is such an integral part of it. And I often wonder why more practices haven't gone down this route in a kind of a professional, and I hate to say it, but like an industrial way in which you've managed to do.
Yep.
What would be the number of accounting partnerships you have as of today?
During COVID, COVID was a really pivotal moment for us. We had a board meeting in November 2019, and we looked at the business and we thought we can go two ways. We can probably operate as what we call sort of a practice where, four or five of us can run some client fees, or we could corporatize the model. And we decided on the latter. We believed that we had a strategy cognizant of corporatizing, but it needed a lot of investment, a material level of investment. And we had our eye on a number of different people. Next minute, you're in Melbourne, COVID happens, not a lot to do. And a number of the people that we strategically considered actually came onto the market, and we snatched those particular people up.
Right.
So
did you use a borrowing to do that? Is that sort of what you historically did?
So I think one thing reflecting on, and I was having this conversation the other day with some of our friends at Macquarie, have been a great relationship for us through the journey. And I said, and this is off the back of, I think, 10 years of looking at some of the best businesses in the world who, at scale come out of the US. And there's particular, there's been a few moments through the last 10 years where I've really considered what is our strategy for growth. And the conversations that's come down to, which I think dictates your ability to grow, is, are you a yield play? I'll explain that in a moment, or are you a growth play? So a yield play in my mind is that you take out every dollar out of the business that you effectively make, you use it for lifestyle, and a growth play is you're very, very conservative with your dividend policy and you reinvest for growth. Now it is hard to go home to your partner and say, this year we're taking 50% of what we took last year, but I'm not sure how you grow unless you actually do that. So we made that decision back in 2019 that would keep our dividends at 30 to 40% of the after tax. Yes, that hurts, but I don't think we'd be in this position today unless we made that conscious choice.
So you're building a war chest, either paying down principal or just building a cash buffer for small bolt-ins.
For investment.
So you could move fast.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, I'm reading off your website here. For 20 years, we've held one belief. We achieve more through collaboration. That's why Partners Wealth Group is trusted partners for 100 leading accounting practices. But Partners Wealth Group today is not just accounting and financial planning. You've got other divisions that I think is a natural fit. Yep. But how did they evolve along the way? Did you pick them up as demand dictated, or was it strategic? And what are they, I suppose?
Sure. So I think within our wealth business, we do have several key professional services. Obviously, it's a traditional financial planning, probably a little bit more broader wealth management, which is probably a little bit more sophisticated.
Because you do wholesale and retail across
the script. Wholesale, retail. We look after what we call sub-family office, those clients up to $200 million.
Yep.
We have, we consider him to be a gentleman called Luke Andrews, one of the best aged care advisors in the country. I know there's some amazing aged care advisors there, but why not say he's one of the best?
Shout out.
We also... obviously life insurance, and then we have legal and a lending business as well, in addition to an investment arm. We'll shortly have 10 people within our investment business. But it's fair to say, to get to this particular point for certainly the legal and lending business has been an absolute challenge. And
why do you think that is?
They're just different disciplines. I mean, to try to be a financial advisor, to think like a lawyer, to try to think like a lending, it's chalk and cheese.
Well, I think scaling up a law firm's tough ass. There's no doubt about it. I've had a crack with the lending. I reckon there's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So
looking back, we tried it all, and the what we actually landed on, which we should have done 10 years ago, is we've landed on effectively joint ventures, whereby we actually bring in existing businesses that, like the distribution model we've got amongst 50 plus very, very solid accounting relationships and 100 or 200 more.
Yeah.
We do call them Facebook friends. We love them, but we don't get to catch them as much as the others. But the joint ventures work, actually bringing in professionals that run their own business.
Yeah.
They've got skin in the game to sit alongside, absolutely performing at the top of their game, as opposed to trying to recruit people to develop a business with younger people within it. And that's been a success.
Well, I can't agree more wholeheartedly, because it gives you capacity and capability to be able to, achieve those wealth solutions with your practice.
Yeah. And the type of client that, I think deeply about, what's happening in the world of advice, over the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years and 20 years. I think particularly for the younger advisors thinking about, what their role will be over that period of time. Clearly, we're in a really interesting position. Yesterday, in the market, Steadfast, obviously a insurance broking business, came off 10%, and some of the insurers around the world came off 15% because an AI service actually came on in around insurance. And if we actually think about what's actually playing out, we need to future-proof what we're actually doing. And to me, after seeing in the US, Vanguard in, I think, Pennsylvania, have a warehouse of people selling financial advice of 40 basis points. If we don't think about going up the sophistication chain of an added level of complexity that higher wealth people need, then I just do get concerned about what that looks like into the future. So I think that's a challenge for all of us. And I think those broader services allow us to have a broader and wider engagement with our accounting partners and clients.
So with that sentiment in mind and getting to your own engine room, your own business, moving up that sophistication. I mean, you said when you went out to accountants to start with, you perfected or got very good at self-managed funds, got very good at specific things, became valuable to people.
Yes.
And as you scale, what's the size of the business now?
So we made some acquisitions in 2025, two in WA. We made an acquisition in Sydney and an acquisition in Melbourne. Three of those partners have joined the business where they have effectively rolled their equity into Partners Wealth Group. So that was nice to...
Yeah, welcome aboard if you're listening.
Yeah.
It's part of your KPIs, by the way.
That's it. Ecstatic a number of months on to have them. And
they roll into your brand over a period of time. Is there a transition straight away?
Which is also nice to think about that when we're sitting down engaging... And we very much spoke to four parties.
Yep.
All four of those actually joined us and looked at our business and said, we actually really like what you've done, what you're actually investing in, et cetera. So we're sort of pretty much on $6 billion. We've got, I think it's 49 authorized reps or advisors, about 160 staff, Melbourne's head office. We had a new Sydney office. We moved into last week on Castlereagh Street, incredible premises, and moving in next week to a new office in St. George's Terrace in Perth as well. So a pretty exciting time within the business. We believe we've got a large platform. The other engagement model with accounting firms we do is we run a model where we run a joint venture with accounting firms that believe they want to be in advice. It's not just a referral model, but they've actually had trouble actually scaling that particular business. So we've been doing that for 15 years. It's a really, really interesting model. It's growing about 50% per annum. And to see that accountants actually understand that they want to be part of it and they want to have a business involved in it is a really exciting initiative for us.
How do you have the bandwidth? Or I imagine you've got quite a deep and talented bench on the exec team here. But with those joint ventures, that then means that you're effectively sharing a new co or a vehicle. You've got directors on there. You're doing board meetings. You're doing the governance.
Correct.
And you were doing that way before the private equity came into town over the last 10 years. How do you compartmentalize each one of those businesses? What's the sort of the trick to doing that? Because you're right, they all have their own things, but they've all got their own personalities as well. It's a lot of board meetings. How many have you got of those?
We will be signing at 20th in April this year.
Yeah, that's 20 board meetings per whatever your cycle is. How do you do it?
So again, it's an investment, Roxy, into capability. You know, we're constantly looking at the market and thinking about who we believe can actually add talent to the business. What is really interesting 24 years on? I mean, year one, year two, year three, who are you? What do you do? And it's been nice at the moment to, you know, with a little bit of industry recognition, which again, let's not get ahead of ourselves too much. You know, there's some incredible advisors out in the country and the Barron's thing, while nice, you know, Nice to be in the top, you know, 50 at least. But, you know, investment and capability, I think, is one thing we need to do. And going back to that ability to scale, you can't do it unless you're prepared to invest in capability. And so we're constantly...
Which means you can't be a yield play.
You can't be a yield play, exactly. And that's okay. I'm not suggesting that a model is the only model, the appropriate model. It's just appropriate on the basis of our aspiration. And the best businesses I've seen in the world have this reinvestment because it allows them to get the right technology, the right capability to enable you, you know, for example, to expand your technology, give consideration to what AI has, to have your 20 joint ventures, to actually have a governance and advisory board sits across risk managing the business. Because as we get bigger, you need to also manage, you know, the risk associated with 4,500 families and, you know, $6 billion of capital.
I was going to ask how many families you got. So 4,500 is moving around a lot of people.
Correct.
What's the ratio between wholesale, your wholesale engagement with that number and the retail engagement?
We are about 30% retail, 70% wholesale.
And how has that moved over the last decade?
There's a blend. You know, advice documents are completed pretty much for every one of those clients. I think that there's probably been a reversal of that, you know, 70, 30 to 30, 70 over that period of time.
I think you're right, yeah.
I mean, the level of wealth we see today is just incredible, what's actually playing out. And it does feel to me that the world is trading on a one global platform more than it ever has before. You're seeing, you know, private equity playing a massive part in all parts of Australia, all parts of the world. And you know, it's interesting at this stage of my career to also see the fact that we're engaging with people with family offices, with capital through Europe, through the US, through Asia. And, you know, we've got a part to play in that. You know, that's so different to what we thought was happening 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, incredibly interesting too.
Yeah, helping them roll a few supers into this Sell Me Zoo Fund is a big...
It's a little bit different.
It absolutely is. With your 49 advisors, you said you've got 4,500 clients,
yes.
70-30, 49 advisors. Feels like an average of about 100 of these right. people per. So I know that you've got COO, you've got heads of advice and whatnot. What's the philosophy of how you run them? So if I'm an AR, I'm the tip of the spear, and what sort of support do I have to run those
accounts? What we've thought about within the business, and again, a lot of this has been gleaned from some of the best businesses in the US. There was an incredible business I saw in Los Angeles in 2022. And there was the Barron's number one advisor for, I think, 5 years in a row, named Spuds Powell. And he was in a business called Kayne Anderson Rudnick, and was sitting there in Los Angeles, and Spuds was talking about his business and his team. And we said, "So Spuds, this sounds great. How many client fees do you run?" He goes, "Oh, Matthew, you know, we've got $25 million in our team, and there's six people and support staff." And I thought, $25 million amongst six professionals. And I was intrigued. I'm sitting there in Century City, LA, going, "Mate, you got to tell me more." And I felt like I hogged that meeting where I was there. But I was just intrigued about how they had achieved that. And really what it came down to is we know what advisors actually do best, which is problem solve, sit in front of clients, engage with them, ask questions, delve into things that's actually happening within their family.
Active listening.
Active listening. But what they, you know, what they don't need to do is once they actually have a talented team around them, is to play out every single part of what you need to have in an SOA, review every note from a meeting. So what we do with an advisor is we actually have a senior associate and an associate join in every meeting. So yep. Most of our meetings will have 2, 3, 4, or 5, depending upon the complexity, people within that meeting for that client.
Yeah, so they're getting a real second chair, 100%. and they feel like there's a team, which also from a risk mitigation means that if there is an issue or someone's gone on holiday or have a child or anything like that.
The team's still on, Roxy.
The team's still on. So,
still here.
So you've got that the second chair, then you've got someone in operations. So there's two parts to my question. One is when you bring in those businesses who sell their stake in cheaper cash and script, is part of them coming in to tap into that capability and capacity?
100%. In fact, to bring these people on board and then to, you know, change their team is not what we're about. You know, these people have run businesses, they've been successful. And we want to engage with those people. Clearly, there's going to be a little bit of change with them. But we think that by allowing advisors to do what they do best and actually taking away the things they shouldn't do generally drives 30 to 40% capacity gains. And so that allows them to see more people. You know, we've also got, you know, through this growth mode and these additional accounting relationships, I've actually got a lot of opportunity through them as well that needs senior people. So we think we can fill that 30 to 40% capacity really, really well. And obviously that's, beneficial for the accounting firms, the capability of them, and the interest of the advisors doing what they should be doing best. And we've had some really good net promoter scores across our advisor base and across our team, operating about 75%, which you know, is one of our key KPIs in making sure people love being here.
Your banks like to get to zero, so, you know, to give you a heads up. So I've got two questions. One was I feel that with the accounting partnerships, it used to be a nice to have you, but you intimated the rise of AI. If you're an accountant, this is an existential threat for that compliance 100%. Part.
Yep.
So I'll parlay the question into what are you doing as far as sort of automating or outsourcing or how do you do that in your wealth business? Because even the second chair now doesn't want to have to do all the work in the meetings.
Yeah, correct. So very much what we do is we do AI note taking for every meeting to get file notes off the back.
Which one are you using for the listeners?
I would need to refer that through to.
I will double check. I'll get Kieran. Kieran's looking at me, going, "I think I know." So, he's a chatterbox.
Yeah.
So.
And then what we actually do is we actually have an outsourced group. I believe you know that group very well, Roxy. BBP. They've been an incredible relationship we actually had. But what we want our team here to do is do the client engagement side with the support and the automation and the follow-up work completed by the VBP team. It has been a great relationship. I think it's really helped us to streamline the business.
But we're seeing the same. That business is seeing the same megatrends in that, if you're not getting, file notes is definitely the first thing, and then people are going to demand it. It's really interesting. I purposely looked up your name and the Barron's thing today, and the first thing that popped up wasn't actually the articles, wasn't Barron's. It was AI's interpretation of you in Barron's.
Yes,
like giving me the roundup.
That's it.
And I'm like, oh wow,
yeah,
that's new.
Yeah, and I think the challenge for all of us is to go deeper and deeper with our client needs. And this is why I'm really, really confident if you actually can get some scale within your business with breadth of services, why we're going to be bulletproof in the future. Because, if someone had a major heart condition, you can't get on Google or Copilot and say, I've got a major heart condition, here's the answer. You need to actually ask questions, and those questions are not always evident as to what issues people are facing, either with their health or their wealth. And I often think it's the curveball question or the left field question that you may ask someone that actually covers a need that sometimes can actually be a major issue actually playing out within the family.
I love when they say that's a great question.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get them. Yeah.
And I remember one that great to tell some stories. I remember one where I saw some clients, just absolutely incredible people, and they came in one day and I looked at them and I said, you don't look well. I've known them for sort of 15 years. You don't look well. What's going on? And they said, we have a challenge. And I said, well, you need to share, because I can tell there's some stress going on. And what actually happened is these clients had effectively facilitated a loan against their property in Melbourne to help their son open a restaurant. And I'd been in the restaurant. The meal were great. However, things weren't traveling to plan. And after a year, we didn't facilitate the loan. We went across the detail. That loan had gone to 70% of the value of the house. They came in sick because the son had also been wasting some money on some habits, and the likelihood was that we had to sell the home.
Jeepers.
So we started having a chat, and it wasn't financial advice. I think it was about caring about the people. And what we'd established was that when the bank had actually provided the loan, they actually had requested they seek legal advice. So the extent to which they understood what they were getting themselves into wasn't actually there, and the son didn't have the authority to extend the loan against his parents' property.
Sounds like the bank had a problem.
The bank had a problem, and we negotiated that for him. We kept the family home. I think we negotiated the $1.5 million debt back to around $300,000 and really saved that financial family's well-being forever. And stories like that stick with you about why you do what you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why you care. And caring isn't about necessarily just asking the questions in front of you. It's going more broader.
And I suppose when you mentioned you've brought a few people in for cash and script, and you've also mentioned that you've got a strong dividend policy, you've got a board, you've got an advisory board, but the composition of ownership of this business is predominantly the people working in it. Is that correct?
100%, yes.
Okay.
So we're 100% privately owned. We kicked off a really important program, and I encourage everybody to think about this. We call it the Pathway to Equity Program. We kicked that off 8 years ago. We did a lot of work through our chartered accounting firm. I think Macquarie contributed to it. And what we wanted, we had the philosophy, and being the founder or one of the founders of this business and then the CEO, I could have had the ability to own 80 to 85% of this business. And I thought, if we're going to create a business where people actually want to make an impact, they want to be empowered, it makes it a great place to be. How do we actually get that mindset that everybody treats this business as an owner? And so we kicked off this Pathway to Equity program. We created
So that was like 2017-18?
2017-18,
interesting.
Yeah. And we facilitated a program that's now got us to the stage where a third of our team, which we've got, I think it's 48 shareholders within the business.
Wow.
And some of the youngest shareholders are actually aged 25, 26 at the moment, which has been incredible for the transition, the mindset shift of them seeing that when they walk through the door, they go, I actually own part of this business.
Which obviously infers that you're very transparent with your team members as to the financial success.
Correct.
And why I asked the date was that it was, I think, 2020, you came 10th in the best place to work in Australia. And there's probably no coincidence that was a couple of years after, amongst a lot of other things, and you've got a people and culture manager, so, but this I suppose, willingness of the founders to open up and say, come along the journey with you resonates.
Huge. And a lot of those people that have now made, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, has been life-changing for them and their family. Like they come along to the annual shareholder dinner, they look at what's going on, they actually just, it actually means something. It's not like it's a job. They know we care. And most of those people have genuinely actually got equity before they've asked for it. That in itself is a really deep, big material shift in the way you treat within our business. I'm not saying it's every business, but within our business, that's made a really big impact for people just saying, you care, you're in with us, you're partners with us, we're in it long term. And to me, you know, what still drives me is clearly the impact you make for you know, for clients, but also, you know, the lives you change through what the business facilitates, through the families that align with it. And that's, you know, that's incredibly empowering.
And so that program sounds like, you've, as you say, you've got about a third there. And I suppose a question that I've got is, quite often the best people that you want to bring on that journey, you mentioned a 25 or someone in that 25 yes, to yes. 45, they're also struggling with trying to send their kids to good schools and mortgages and whatnot. So have you lent into one of your banking partners to facilitate?
Macquarie's been amazing on that. We very much use the balance sheet of the Partners Wealth Group business to facilitate.
And you've got a dividend policy as well, right? So yes, everyone's correct. Got the confidence.
Correct. Very much the dividend well and truly covers their interest payments. Yep. It's facilitated against the Partners Wealth Group balance sheet. And so they can come in with it with 100% loan against the balance sheet, no money down, and really see their equity grow over a period of time, which is just some incredible stories we've had off the back of that.
And getting back to the geese, you've now got some.
We do.
Yeah, you've got one third of them.
One third.
One third of them are now hopefully working at 71%.
That's it. That's
so
that's
I'm not sure whether I'm not sure whether this is your boardroom sort of mandate, but you know, if you look back and go, well, you know, I made the conscious decision to. There's a few sliding door moments in what you've done, whether it's coming from markets back to Australia to setting up to going deliberately out to prickly customers in accountants and also then bringing the equity in and bringing that along is a significant investment of your life and also you're opening yourself up as well, right?
Yeah,
you know, 100%. It's so the types of clients that you guys, I suppose, attract. I mean, it's quite broad, isn't it? Because you're so big.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we might have some clients that come to us for get their estate planning done. Yep. We might have some people that need some life insurance. So we have predominantly within the wealth business three client categories that we're really specific about, and we spend a lot of time determining what we think our offers are to those particular clients. And those three client categories, which we continue to, you know, review and evolve, are really up to the $3 million client. We then have the $3 million to the $15 million client. We have the $15 million client really up to the family office stage. We think at family office, they'll generally have their own degree of capability. We think probably less than around about $200 million. They'd like to have a team of people looking after them, but they probably don't want the cost of actually having a team. So within those segments, we're really clear about what we do and what we don't do. And we've also developed, this sub-family office offer for people that have a level of capital that really requires a fair bit of attention. And the way we've considered that is that when people get to the level, particularly running a business that's got a lot of capital, do they just want to pass that off to someone else and have them manage it, or do they want to become the chairman or the chairperson of their wealth? And that's really a model that we've developed and spent 10 plus years working that through, seeing some great businesses around the world doing it. And I always say the success leaves clues, follow the smart people who are doing it.
Good old Spud, is that right?
Yeah, that's it. Old Spud's taught us a few things.
Yeah. So I know that you're also a very busy man, so I'm going to, I suppose, end with a few sort of, I suppose, questions and visions for the future. Let's talk about, you know, you're clearly open to acquisitive in areas.
Yes.
You mentioned you're just kicking off in Perth, and Sydney.
Yeah.
Where would you say, like, if you're listening to this and you go, you know what, I like the sound of that.
No.
You know, I think if people knew Partners 10 years ago, that they wouldn't have known that you've got this democratization of shareholding. That's probably something that now the market knows. Yep, and it's put you up there in that desirous category. Where are you looking to concentrate, or you're open to sort of talking to people in any jurisdiction?
I think, I mean, you know, doing what we do, and when you do it every day, I think just alignment between people is just at the start of it. You know, do I think I could work with this person every day, and do I think they're actually going to make me better? We always think about every engagement's got to be, you know, 1 + 1 = 4. You know, how as a result of collaborating together do we all win off the back of that? And that's always been a philosophy, I think, of every partnership we've actually had. Just before I joined this podcast, I had had one of our, you know, most impressive young advisors that we have within the business. He's aged 30. He's been a shareholder for 4 years. In fact, last year he actually took 8 months off. He's just got married, about to have kids, and he came to us and said, I want to take a year off. And we said, well, how about 8 months? He said, okay. And he came to me and said, well, you know, what can you teach? You know, I'm going to New York this year. You know, who should I meet? What can you teach me that I can learn over the next 5 years to help me be better at 35 and like I'm 45? And I think that's the challenge, that unless you've got people around you that can actually help you accelerate your learning, your capability, it's like me and you, Roxy, like how could we instill our, you know, 30 years of experience back into the 30-year-olds? Yeah, if we could do that, we'd be going beautifully, probably play more golf and be in Europe more. But
well, I don't know if you realize you're doing it right now. Sure. As we speak. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was part of the passion piece around Ensemble was I would have loved to hear from someone like yourself when I was 25.
Yeah.
Whether I'm in your business or not. Because the biggest thing is that you don't just all of a sudden happen, and it's just like us.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're experimenting with business models, you're wondering whether it's going to work or not. Yes. You know, the advice is just to get into it.
Well, go and speak to a lot of people. Think about your future. You know, what part do you want to play into the future? And I do think that a more, you know, going up the sophisticated chain, the complex chain, I think that's where, you know, you're going to be bulletproof into the future as an advisor. And
that future's coming fast. I think we're in agreement. Yeah.
100% it is. And you can't do that yourself. And I know, even within our business, even though I'm one of the founders, there's no way in hell I could actually provide the level of advice I could provide without the talent we've recruited in this business. And so think about your future. Think about what part you want to play in it. Think about how getting together with some like-minded people that share the same view and the same passion about looking after the client, having a great culture within the business, can help you be the best you can be. Now, whether it be sport, business, or otherwise, I think we've got one opportunity to be the best we can be. And, you know, I think that's certainly one thing that continues to drive me, but I know I can't do that by myself. And we've built an incredible team here. They are like family because, you know, that's the way we treat each other. I think we behave like that in the equity model. And we just want to continue to attract great people that share our view. And I think off the back of, you know, the 25 years, we're now at the stage where we do have a lot of demand for advice, and we'd love to speak to people that kind of share that view of where we're heading as a business.
Well, I normally do the wrap up and the elevator pitch, but you just did a brilliant one then couple of minutes. If you've listened to this podcast and you know the Partners Wealth Group will be in the links, you can have a look at their website. There's probably a good chance that they're close to you. If you'd like to reach out to them, there'll be links as well. The biggest takeaway that I've done is this is not a business that's going to be here today and gone tomorrow. The shareholders, the leadership are in it for all the right reasons. And whether you're 25, 35 or 55 selling your business in, this business is a pretty solid long term.
Yeah, we've got our average shareholder is also 38. So we're not at that.
It's amazing. Genuinely amazing.
Yeah,
I mean,
of our careers. And I know I'll always be doing this. I'm intrigued by investments and markets and the like. So we'll always be doing it. I'm not sure in 20 years I'll be going as hard as I've gone in the first 24. But also, you know, I think, you know, well done to you on this, you know, podcast, what you're doing on Ensemble. It's, you know, I generally think that we've got to be open to getting better together. And we you know, this industry and our responsibility, you know, when you've been in for a long period of time, is to give back and make sure that the what you're, you know, the industry tomorrow is better than what it was today. And I think that's all our responsibilities. And I certainly think what you're doing and leading with this is awesome for the industry. So well done, Roxy.
Thanks, Matt. We are the custodians of the future. And on behalf of Ensemble, thank you very much for being on The Engine Room. Cheers, mate.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Roxy.